Welcome to Insights and Indicators. I'm Jason Thomas, Carlyle's Head of Global Research and Investment Strategy. And this podcast, I share our observations and opinions on the economic landscape, as well as insights from research being conducted by our team here at Carlyle. Today, I have the pleasure of being joined by Brian Bernasek and Steve Wise, co-head of America's Corporate Private Equity here at Carlyle. And we'll discuss trends they're seeing in private markets, and also talk about what the insights they're deriving from their portfolio. This episode was recorded on September 11th, 2025, and the discussion reflects composite portfolio data and analysis of recent government reports that are accurate as of that date. Before we turn to Brian and Steve, two quick things. First, I did want to give a plug for our recent paper, Through the Looking Glass. It's available on the Carlyle website. I encourage you to read it. The paper looks at some of the changing institutional relations, we'll say. Over the last 15 years, really the period after the global financial crisis, the Fed took some actions, expanded its balance sheet, that in many ways blurred the lines between fiscal and monetary policy. It now seems that the Treasury or broader administration could do some line blurring of its own over the next couple of years. At the same time, of course, we have a stock market where there's this extraordinary degree of concentration risk. The top 10 stocks account for 40% of total market capitalization. That's higher than has ever been before observed. But even more interesting is that 8 of those 10 companies operate in the same industry, and 7 of them have really their financial future staked on AI. That is quite different than 2000, for example, the last time you saw a concentration of the top 10 stocks anywhere approaching these levels. At that time, yes, you had a lot of internet companies, certainly Microsoft, Intel, Oracle in that mix, but you also had GE, Walmart, Exxon, Pfizer. You had a concentration among top 10, but some degree of diversification in that top 10 that doesn't exist today. And so really the thesis of the paper is that there seems to be a widening range of potential outcomes for stocks and bonds today, even as the market seems to be pricing into a very narrow band of that range, which, you know, could be perhaps an AI-inflected best case scenario. The only other point I would make, a lot of attention has been paid to recent employment data, which has been disappointing, both the monthly payroll employment growth, as well as a large 900,000 downward revision to payroll employment growth since March. Clearly, this CES, this establishment survey, is broken. If this were the only data that we had to rely on to measure the health of the economy, we'd be in a really bad place. You know, we wouldn't have a great sense of how things are going. Thankfully, it's not. Thankfully, there's lots of other government reports, as well as, of course, data that we get from our portfolio. And I would say first, to the extent that there is less employment than expected, but there is no downward revision in GDP, just as we saw last year, well, all that implies is that the employees who actually were on payrolls were actually much more productive than expected. Of course, last year we saw initially an 800,000 downward revision in payrolls, no downward revision in GDP, and that led to an upward revision in productivity growth. I think we're very likely to see the same thing today. Secondly, we've continued to see pretty solid company results. Again, the data from companies that are most cyclically sensitive, suggesting that yes, the economy has slowed relative to 23, 2024, but it's still in a reasonably good place. Of course, household income continues to grow at a 5% annual rate. So at the same time, we do see inflation that continues, at least on a core basis, to be 3% rather than the 2% target for the Fed. And I think many people say, well, 2%, 3%, what's the difference? But of course, we're talking about the rate of growth in prices today that's coming on top of a 21% cumulative increase in consumer prices since 2021. So given that context, given the cumulative growth in prices over the past couple of years, I don't think it's so unreasonable that voters continue to identify inflation as a top issue facing the country. So I think, you know, of course, the Fed is going to cut rates next week, likely 25 basis points. Maybe there'll be one or two more cuts this year. But I think it sets up for a pretty interesting circumstance as the labor market and inflation goals are perhaps in greater conflict than the Fed has been accustomed to dealing with, where with inflation gone over the last 15 years, it's been pretty easy to cut rates at any sign of labor market weakness. So with that, very happy for Brian and Steve to be joining us this month. I just wanted to talk about the portfolio. You know, obviously you are interested in portfolio performance from a financial perspective, generating the returns, value creation. I'm certainly, you know, more interested in identifying those metrics that are most correlated with broader activity, trying to derive information that's going to be of macro significance. But I was just wondering, Brian, if you could start and just give me your perspective of what you're seeing in the portfolio and how it makes you feel about the broader economy.
Sure, Jason. And thanks for having us. It's always good to spend time together. And three of us always have a lot of chats inside and outside of the office. And I think it's the first time on a podcast, but it's a great opportunity to do it. So glad we're doing this. Look, when I look at the portfolio, one, we're at a starting point in the portfolio that, as you know, our investment approach is to focus on investing in really high quality companies to start with, right? And across a variety of sectors, across healthcare, across industrial, across financial services, across aerospace, defense, government services, and then in technology and software in those areas. So that's where we're focused and primarily focused with U.S. based revenue and EBITDA, but we have a global flavor to our practice and business as well. So that's sort of the starting point. And when you look at our year-to-date growth across that portfolio, you know, we're seeing pretty healthy numbers across the board. Now, some sectors are growing faster than others. The aerospace, defense, government services is growing at a very nice rate, as is some of the technology businesses that we have. The industrial practice and businesses are a little bit slower, depending on the business and the sector. And within that, you know, there are a couple big key trends that we're absolutely seeing on the growth side. Anything that's in support of the push forward on AI is seeing lift. So when you see the data center spend on either construction or just the need for AI consulting and guidance, we're seeing that. You see it on the electrification of the economy. We see that in our portfolio and the benefits there. Really, software continues to grow. The right businesses are able to take price. You see that also in financial services where they're adding a real value and benefit. You see that lift. The places where we might see some softness tend to be more in what you'd see in Europe as a slower industrial economy in particular, and that leaks through globally. Tariffs have impacted and slowed some of the growth, particularly on the margin side, of course, in a few of our businesses that are cross-border in nature, and that's across sectors, but for us, more in the industrial and the healthcare side. And we definitely see softness from DOGE activities. Now, we're mostly focused in our business, in our practice, in our government services area, in support of cybersecurity and IT support that is more national security-based. And that's a sector that's been receiving broad bipartisan support, and there continues to be a lot of opportunity there. But it's still a world where flat to up a little bit is what you'd expect is the best in that particular national security area. The places that are outside of that vein that are government services side, fortunately, we don't have very much at all of that in our portfolio, has seen real softness. But that's sort of the lay of the land. Pretty good, healthy growth, and pretty consistent with what you're speaking of from a macro perspective, the big questions of, you know, we're not seeing big drives to the downside on labor. We're also not seeing really big lifts on inflation, but we're not seeing either of those go in the other direction either. So there's a lot to sort through.
Steve, we just had our annual global investor conference here in Washington, D.C. It was great to communicate with so many investors, see people, old friends that don't get to talk to quite as regularly as we'd like. And one of the things that, of course, is on people's minds, investors in private markets, is just the fact that distributions, overall transaction volumes, but especially distributions have been light for a few years now. I know that's something that you have generally bucked a trend on, very high rate of distributions in relation to invested capital. I was wondering, why has your experience been so different relative to that of the broader market?
Well, thanks, Jason, and I'll echo what Brian said. Thanks for having us on the podcast. This will be fun. Look, we had a great conference, Jason. I think people generally were in a very good mood for several reasons. One, being the economy is in reasonable shape and the stock market is at all-time highs, as you've seen. And in particular, as it relates to us, our portfolio is doing very well. Really across the board, as Brian had mentioned, across all of our industry verticals, as we say, our power alleys, across all of our deal archetypes, you know, we invest in industry leaders, and we invest in big, large global carve-outs, we invest in growth businesses, and we invest in buy and builds. As Brian said, the operating performance has been very good as we look out. So why is that? You know, I think it's really the fact that we've invested in really strong, resilient businesses that are market leading and have strong relative market shares and are in spaces that people want to be invested in. So our distribution activity is actually very balanced across IPOs, it's balanced across financial buyers, and it's balanced across strategic buyers. And we haven't been overweighted, I think, like some into technology. So I think some of the issues in the market with the lack of distributions is an overweight in technology assets that were purchased at very high prices. And there's a problem in terms of, you know, how do you monetize those without taking a real big multiple hit? And, you know, our investments are really broadly distributed across all parts of the economy. And that's allowed us to take businesses like StandardAero public late last year, which was, you know, an industry-leading aerospace aftermarkets services business, where the market was really looking for companies that have really strong growth that are not completely wedded to technology. So it's really been, I'd say, the quality of the portfolio and the diversity of our business mix that has allowed us to have real optionality on exits.
Brian, just going back to you, you did mention AI. And boy, yesterday, one of the most interesting days in markets I can remember, Oracle reported about $500 billion in what I would describe as soft orders for its cloud infrastructure business. And the stock rose 36%. Now you see 36% moves in stocks from time to time, but generally we're talking about companies, 500 million, maybe $1 billion in market cap. This is a company with a market cap of excess of $600 billion that added, you know, essentially $300 billion of market cap over the course of a trading day. And there's a lot going on. I want to hear, you know, how you're operationalizing it, but how are we as investors or broader market observers supposed to think about some of these moves? And, you know, I don't want to say hype, but just the degree of optimism that we see in some corners.
It is really remarkable, isn't it? It even drives a switch in who's the world's richest man overnight, I think, as well. So there are implications of these moves.
Yeah, that's very good news for Michigan football.
That's right. Not so good for Notre Dame football, but good for Michigan football. So, yeah, look, I mean, AI, huge amount of funding and drive towards increasing AI capabilities and broadly, right, in society and within business. We do firmly believe that there is, and we're seeing it already, and we expect we'll see it even more further in the quarters and years ahead, an opportunity to use these tools to help us with some of our investment decisions and also within the portfolio and to drive efficiencies and growth in a portfolio and in specific companies. And we're putting a lot of attention towards each of those activities, the assessment of a new opportunity. And there are a number of tools that we have internally. We've invested a tremendous amount of money, time from the team to get better and better and use our resources on that front end. But there are also a number of other tools that are available to us that we tap into to use on the new deal side. And then within the portfolio, we have seen opportunities within a variety of businesses. In fact, the vast number of our businesses are pulling towards it and asking to be more aware of the opportunities and to utilize these tools within their portfolio to drive these changes. So for example, you know, we have businesses that are using AI tools to help with R&D productivity, to use with inventory optimization, to use on the pricing side, even such things as AI assistants to help with businesses to grab even better info to share with that customer base and use that internal tool to do that. So I would say each of these businesses, though, is benefiting more in the zone of single-digit EBITDA change, right? It hasn't been a sea change of $100 or $200 million change in top line or earnings from these, but it's a series of smaller opportunities within these that we'll see and push throughout the portfolio. We've also put a lot of our internal resource towards, as I mentioned, on the data science and the data lake pool that we have available, but also with just within our team to make sure that we're sharing best practices across the portfolio.
Steve, let's talk about the future, the deals that you're underwriting today. You know, what kinds of deal archetypes are you looking at? Not just industries, of course, but types of deals. And then how competitive is the environment right now, would you say?
Yeah, well, why don't I start with the second part? The environment's always competitive. We live in a hyper-competitive world, especially the size transactions that we're looking at. You really don't find opportunities where you're putting $500 million or $1 billion to work that are proprietary. So, you know, as opposed to proprietary deal flow, what I like to say is we're looking for proprietary insights. And so when we have proprietary insights, we're very happy operating in a very competitive market. And, you know, when we think about our deal flow, it doesn't really change based on what's happening in the market, you know, week to week or month to month, because we try to take a top-down macro thematic approach to investing. And the best deals that we do are ones that our teams have selected sub-verticals within those industries that have enduring tailwinds that they're very focused on, and they're looking at those deals for years. And as I like to say, they turn over a lot of rocks, they kiss a lot of frogs, they surround themselves with all the right industry observers and consultants and executives and companies in those spaces. So when an opportunity presents itself, they're ready to pounce. You know, I'll give you an example. One of our more recent deals, a company called Vantive, was a carve out from Baxter in the med tech space. And we had surrounded ourselves, our healthcare team had, with some executives that were in between roles to go find an opportunity in the med tech space selling into hospitals. And when Baxter decided to sell Vantive, you know, it was a very complicated deal. It was a global deal. It was a $4 billion transaction. There was complexity in China. There was a big carve out you had to do, and you needed to bring management resources to bear. So when that opportunity presented itself, our team was poised to compete on all those fronts, and others really were not. So we ended up really only having one competitor at the end of the day because of those dynamics, and we were able to buy that business for, you know, around 7x EBITDA in a market where the competitors are really in the mid-teens. If we can carve it out and have it continue to grow the way we know it can, it'll be a special deal. So we generally don't worry about competition that much because we're going to play where we think we've got a real right to win, and we've got a game plan to do that. Opportunities that we're seeing now, we're continuing to see a lot of opportunities in the carve-out space. We're looking at one right now, a very big industrial company. We're looking at another one in the healthcare space. And we're continuing to see opportunities, as Brian had mentioned earlier, with our aerospace, defense, and government services team. You know, obviously the firm Carlyle founded in Washington, D.C., we've got a real special expertise there and a real right to win. We're seeing a lot of interesting investments around defense and national security and cyber. We just made one called Quantum Leap. And so we're seeing others that are interesting in that space as well. And then I'd say in financial services, we're seeing continuing to see really interesting opportunities in the wealth space and insurance services. Those are some really special areas where the team has had a lot of success over a long period of time.
Yeah, that's really remarkable to buy something with a EBITDA yield in excess of 14% in these kinds of markets. I mean, particularly given the way that some of the yields in credit markets have been driven down, everything, you know, grinding lower and lower. That's amazing. You know, let's just conclude. I'll ask a question to both of you. A rate cut from the Fed next week seems all but assured. I think somewhat hotter inflation data means it's only going to be 25 basis points. There were some hoped for a 50 basis point move, but, you know, there could be, of course, additional cuts later this year. And, you know, there is a sense that the Trump administration, with a new Fed chair, with some new appointees, there may be a concerted effort to get base rates down below 3%, you know, over the next 12, 15 months, perhaps. I'm wondering, you know, given what you see in the economy today and in your portfolio, what do you think that would have on the M&A activity? How are you feeling about what the future may hold if there is a material downward move in finance costs? And Brian, if you can start, but Steve, I'd love to hear if you have any views on that as well.
Look, I think as a headline, I think it would help, right? You know, that having the lower rates would help and facilitate more activity, and there would be the animal spirits that would be driving in the direction of more activity. I think, though, that what we're seeing and what we've seen over the last several years come from a big party in 2019, 20, and 21, where there was a tremendous amount of activity and lots of deals that were done. And there's a working through of the hangover post that, that takes time. And each year we're making steady progress in ungumming the system, having more flow, more activity. And what we've seen is a continuation of that in 25. Now, it started out with a much more momentum and just a certainty late last year, beginning of this year, of a really robust year that tapered off. And I'm speaking of the markets. That tapered off with Liberation Day. And now we're seeing a bit of a return of just steady growth year on year of more and more activity. And I think the rate changes would just be in support of that. I don't expect the spigots to open wide with that kind of a rate cut that you mentioned, but more a continuance of where we are, maybe accelerated a bit. But Steve, you may have a different take.
Yeah, no, I don't. Lower rates obviously will help the M&A market, but we're already seeing the M&A market open up. We look at that data regularly, not just announced deals, but pitch data that's coming in to the investment banks that is starting to make some moves upwards as well. So I do see a more robust back half of the year in the M&A market. Having said that, look, I think the stock market is a little bit priced to perfection. While the economy has done well and companies have been propelled forward by AI and strong productivity, and there's been margin expansion and there's been some very good news, there's been a lot out there, right? We had Doge, we've got inflation, we've had tariffs, we've got a really complex geopolitical environment and a domestic environment, and the market seems to sort of look past all of that. And we've got some new data that's come in that shows some potential slowing, both on the employment side, the economic activity side, consumer sentiment, inflation. It's not a completely rosy picture. So it's something that we are very cautious about. And given the price levels, you know, we've told our teams that the bar is raised, you know, risk-adjusted returns are higher for us. And so as we think about M&A, you know, as opposed to the market, we're very, very selective right now. We're looking for those special deals where Carla has an edge, we've got a game plan, and we've got a right to win.
Well, Brian and Steve, you are, if not the busiest, certainly among the busiest people at Carlyle. So I thank you so much for taking time out of your schedule to join us this month.
Okay, it was a lot of fun, Jason. Great to see you.
Thank you, Jason. Happy to do it.
As always, thanks for listening. And I hope you'll join us for next month's episode of Insights and Indicators.